Hello and welcome to the FV English podcast, your one-stop shop for Venezuelan football in English, bringing you fortnightly episodes dedicated to the Venezuelan league, the national teams, and the myriad of Venezuelan players around the world.
Welcome to another episode of the FV English podcast. Today, I am co-hosting with my regular counterpart, Dominic Bisogno. Dominic, how are you?
I'm doing good. It's a nice day here in Duluth, Minnesota, and I'm looking forward to talking.
Me too. And Dominic and I have already been recording for the past half an hour because we were guests on the podcast of Diego Montalban, an ESPN journalist who wanted to talk to us about Venezuela's final two games in CONMEBOL qualifiers, Argentina away and Colombia at home, and how their campaign in general has gone. So Dominic, that's probably, although not the main topic of today, which is the Copa Sudamericana qualifiers, probably a nice little introduction because, of course, those final games are coming up. How do you see the campaign closing out for Venezuela?
Yeah, obviously, these are two difficult games to close out on. But I'm hopeful that the optimism, but also, you know, realism and pragmatism that we saw with the previous window, Peckerman's first window, I'm hoping that continues on. And, you know, I'm hopeful for at least 3 points. That probably come against Colombia. The Argentina game's gonna be tough, but yeah, you know, I'm hopeful for an entertaining international window for sure.
Yeah, and it's sort of like it's nice and it's not nice that we've got the opportunity to end on a high, and the positivity surrounding Peckerman's hiring means that, like, we're all craving to see what Venezuela can do, but then we're reality going to be without competitive football for a long, long time. The Copa America is next in 2023. So we're looking at like 15 months without competitive football. But the news that we will be competing in the Toulon tournament in France at the end of May, an under-23 national side competition that Venezuela has never participated in before, but is very highly rated and should give us the opportunity to not just see some young Liga Football talent, but hopefully some young Venezuelan talent around the world. Perhaps we'll see Dani Perez at Club Bruges, Mateus Lacava, who's at Tondela, Wiki Carmona at New York Red Bulls. The problem with this tournament is that where it's not a FIFA tournament, clubs aren't obliged to release their players for this tournament. So it will depend on where clubs are with their season and whether it lines up with breaks or whether those players are deemed releasable. The Toulon tournament, is that something you're looking forward to, Dominic?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's so much young talent in Venezuela, and you know, this is something that you've taught them on many occasions about, of course, is that particularly because of COVID, a lot of youth tournament opportunities have not happened for Venezuela and for South America as a whole, which is of course a huge problem in terms of player development, particularly for a country that of course benefited from youth tournaments so much sort of in the mid to late 2010s. So I hope that first, I hope that obviously as many players that deserve it as possible are able to make it and work it out with their clubs. And hopefully they, you know, put on a good show and are able to get some good exposure to a whole other part of the world.
And one of the players that we could perhaps expect to see in that tournament is Andres Ferro, a young centre-back at Metropolitanos. Fits the bill, probably would have been a starting centre-back had the South American Championships under-20s, that is, taken place last season. And good news for him at club level. As of this week, Metropolitanos have qualified for their second Copa Sudamericana group stage football on the trot. And that is today's main topic, the Copa Sudamericana qualifiers. Obviously, just gave you a little spoiler there, but the two games were Estudiantes de Mérida against Metropolitanos and Deportivo La Guaira against Hermanos Colmenares. We will talk about Estudiantes Metropolitanos first. Dominic, two legs and two defeats for Estudiantes, but there is so much more to those 180 minutes of football than simply the scoreline. How did it go?
Yeah, you know, I think it's fair to say that at the end of all this, these matches very much echoed the themes these teams are having in league play as the season starts up. And for Estudiantes, that unfortunately is a narrative of a lot of poor results, a lot of struggles, a lot of poor performances. And in the case of the second leg, multiple red cards. It was a rough two legs for Estudiantes, losing 2-0 in the first leg at home, 4-0 in the second leg, albeit it was 1-0 well into the second half. It's not a surprise that all this, of course, resulted in a change of management, a replacement yet to be announced, as we record at least. And it's a weird situation. You know, I expected Estudiantes to be pretty competitive this year, not necessarily for the title, but for a, you know, top half finish. I think we both thought Metro might have a really good shot at beating them overall for this, but I did not picture it to be like this.
A six-nil headline, a six-nil scoreline.
I would have imagined, you know, a much closer result. And so it's a rough one. Obviously, you know, we'll probably go into this more, but starting the second leg with Araque getting the goalkeeper getting a red card for a sort of a weird situation, potentially handling the ball outside the box, albeit it seemed to be by accident. That almost immediately killed any chance of a real comeback for them. And, you know, it just kind of got worse from there. And all of this really just leaves the club in a really strange position. One of the bigger clubs in the country, so to say, at least in terms of history, kind of reputation, they, you know, have a lot of fans. And they are out of continental competition, close to bottom of the table in the league. Not a lot of excitement about any of the players right now. And it's a really awkward time for them.
Yeah, it feels like it's almost got Atletico Venezuela vibes about it from 2020, when they bought a lot of talented players, older talented players. Like, they had Eder Farias, they had Lopolga Gomez, who's now back at Estudiantes de Merida. Adrian Livingston was there at the time. They had a lot of they invested basically in players that would have been high wages, and that's what Estudiantes de Merida seem to have done in this close season. They Lopolga Gomez returned from injury, but Chiqui Mesa was brought back in, who'd spent a season at Academia Puerto Cabello. Peña is back. Adrian Livingston was signed. Their striker Armando Araque is in his 30s too. It's an old squad, but it's an experienced squad. And perhaps the experience that gave people optimism is actually going to be the age that undoes them. I think qualifying for Copa Sudamericana for Metropolitanos, and I've said this before, is going to give their season an interesting dynamic. I think it could really cause them to struggle in Liga Footbay, because you can't, particularly as a Venezuelan side, you can't not put out your best teams in Copa Sudamericana, or disaster could happen. And, you know, Metropolitanos gave a good account of themselves last year, considering it was their first Copa Sudamericana campaign ever and in the group stages, but they still got some heavy defeats, particularly away from home. And that you don't want to repeat that, and you certainly don't want it to worsen. And with the schedule that they're going to have now, a busy schedule, being in the Copa Sudamericana could really have a negative effect on their season. And my worry for Metropolitanos was that they didn't seem to have a recognized goal scorer. And I thought that was going to be their undoing. If you have to mix in the rotation that Copa Sudamericana is going to force upon them, plus not having someone that's going to get you 10, 15 goals a season, you could struggle. But Metropolitanos and Jose Maria Moore, who I really, really like as a DT, seems to already be making me eat my words. Charlie Sortis is coming off the bench and scoring. He did that against Estudiantes, and he did it in the league fixture just before against Zulia. And Robinson Flores, who, of course, I'm already a big fan of, the winger, now has 2 goals and 2 assists in 2 games. He started very well too. And Walter Rajo, the Paraguayan that has returned to Metropolitanos, has started the season really strongly. And now Carlos Semenyo, who was at La Guaira last season, Deportivo Táchira the season before, is a late addition to Metropolitanos' team. So it actually looks like if Maria Moore can handle Copa Sudamericana and Liga Footbay football with rotation and do it well, perhaps I'm going to be made to eat my words and Metropolitanos will comfortably be a top half team.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, you bring up, of course, when they were in the competition in 2021 and yeah, juggling both league play and Sudamericana play is very difficult. And you saw as soon as they didn't really have to worry about the Sudamericana anymore, particularly when they got to Hex B and there was just league play, they blew everyone else out of the water. I mean, completely. I mean,
six games, six wins.
Yeah.
In that period.
And so clearly the ability to thrive in a competition is there. And I would say I'm more optimistic because I think this is a stronger squad. I think they've added some really interesting pieces, not necessarily anyone that when the signings happened were blowing up on Twitter, but now that we're seeing them play, you know, you bring up Charlie Sortiz, for example, it's a guy when he joined the team, obviously also because of some personal issues that happened in the offseason, not really a lot of talk. But here he's playing, he's getting them points or results. And so, I think Moore is just one of those managers that makes things happen. And I imagine that, you know, I'm not predicting that they're going to finish in like the top three or anything, but I, you know, the way they're playing, I'm very optimistic that they could have a strong season in both competitions, a strong season in the Sudamericana, not necessarily meaning a deep run, just meaning a respectable series of performances.
Whereas Estudiantes, I think could be a blessing in disguise that they've lost this, because like I said, the problems that Metropolitanos are going to have, the challenges Maria Moore is going to have to deal with, I think they would have been a lot harder for Estudiantes to deal with because it's a much older squad with a very busy schedule, not just the amount of games, but the amount of traveling involved in as well. That could have been, you know, really tough on Estudiantes. Now the situation they're left in, as you alluded to earlier, Leonel Vielma was sacked in between the first leg and the second leg and is yet to be replaced. How long Estudiantes will take to replace him, no one knows. There's been talk in the past week that Leo Gonzalez, former Deportivo Lara manager, is going to take over, but I've also seen journalists categorically rule that out. So it will be interesting. Regularly, over the past 15 years, one of the many Paezes has stepped in a caretaker role, but the Paez family have largely, you know, left the country at the moment. A lot of them are in the US, and it feels like Estudiantes need to steady the ship quickly, or could get dragged into something that they don't want to be dragged into. There's only going to be one team relegated. It's not going to be Estudiantes, surely.
Yeah. First, you made a great point about if they had ended up winning this series of games against Metro, that actually could have been a much worse curse in the long run. Yeah, I don't think that this squad has the legs to do multiple competitions, particularly if, you know, if we end up seeing them playing in the Copa of Venezuela in some form, and then you have three competitions. I think that would have ended up being disastrous, and I think it actually would have made the worries about a seriously bad season worse. I think it's fair to say that you shouldn't be betting on them getting relegated. I think they have the skill and the resources to simply just outdo the other teams that are doing really badly. But this is a team that, you know, as to a certain extent, in the last couple of years at least, you expect to be at the upper half of the table, have these kinds of continental qualifier games to deal with or to compete for. And right now it does not look like that. You know, obviously turnarounds can happen, but I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think the squad has what it needs to suddenly be different than week six or week seven. My expectations for the team are very different now. So I have a feeling that at the end of all this, they probably have no qualifiers to deal with next year. So,
And the other Venezuelan qualifier in the Copa Sudamericana, if it isn't blatantly clear by now, the Copa Sudamericana qualifiers pit Venezuelan teams against other Venezuelan teams, with two Venezuelan teams therefore guaranteed group stage football. And the other game was either going to result in an epic comeback or a fairy tale finish. And unfortunately for me, who was backing the fairy tale finish, we got the epic comeback, but it was an epic comeback. Hermanos Colmenares were founded in 2016. they competed in the third division in 2017. At the end of that season, administratively promoted. They didn't secure promotion by points per se, but they were administratively promoted when a team above them couldn't take up their place in the second division. They then had three seasons in the second division, two of which ended with the opportunity for promotion. In 2019, they narrowly missed out. In 2020, they sealed promotion and went on to win the title itself against Useve. 2021, they were the revelation of the season, weren't they?
Yeah, I mean, obviously they did well and they got themselves in this position where they're in qualifiers for the Sudamericana, but even just in the immediate in 2021, just about anybody that watched them could tell you that they were playing some of the best football in the league, you know, visually, stylistically. I think that has continued so far this season, even if the results haven't all been great. And they, you know, have so many players in the squad, domestic players, but also Colombian players that have unique, interesting stories, underdog stories that I think really help build that momentum around the team as an sort of underdog, a thriving underdog. And, you know, I think this year will probably have plenty of highs for them, but clearly the start of the season has not been as thrilling.
And the fairy tale finale was obviously, as I'm alluding to, qualifying for the Copa Sudamericana group stages. It would have capped a marvelous 5 years of going from third division to potentially facing a team like Santos, hosting Santos in Barinas and traveling to Brazil to take on a team that was, you know, in the Copa Libertadores final when they were in the second division of Venezuela. After the first leg, Havana's Comuneros led 2-0 thanks to goals from Wilmer Aguinaga Gonzalez, who in 2020 was playing amateur football in the United States and working for a construction company. And the opener, the first goal, was scored by Cesar Magallan, a Venezuelan winger with a lot of pace, who was playing second division, obviously with Havana's Comuneros, as recently as 18 months ago, assisted by Juan Camilo Zapata, who 3 years ago was playing Sunday league football in Colombia, having seemingly dropped out of the professional game. But it all came crashing down in Caracas for them last night. And it was sad to see. It really was. And there was this inevitability about it because La Guaira took the lead after 5 minutes through Sergio Unrein. And they were then on the back foot from minute one, that 2-0 lead that they had immediately evaporating to one. And it was all Deportivo La Guaira. And when that second goal went in, there was so much game left to play, and Havana's Comuneros had their chance and come close, but it was only enough for me to see that certain Havana's Comuneros players literally slumped to the floor on their knees at 2-0. The game was not over. It was 2-2 there, and you know there's no way away goals. So if La Guaira scored three, Havana's Comuneros getting one goal would have seen the game go to extra time. And that's what they were trying to chase in the final minutes, because around after 55 minutes, La Guaira went 3-0 up. And that's when the turnaround was complete. Havana's Comuneros then could have crumbled entirely. There were still like 35, 40 minutes left. They didn't. They held on. And in the final minutes, Camargo, the Havana's Comuneros goalkeeper, was up into the opposition's box for corners and free kicks, attempted two overhead kicks for the spectacular, completely missed the ball on the first one, made contact on the second one. But then the final whistle went and Deportivo La Guaira are into the group stages of Copa Sudamericana. And now Havana's Comuneros is like that wave of momentum that have essentially carried them since the beginning of 2020, since the beginning of their season in the second division, has come to an end. And it's going to be hard to pick themselves up from that.
Yeah, you know, it's the elephant in the room in this conversation as well is that this is a team that is fighting for attention and affection from its home city of Barinas, which of course it shares with Zamora, which is a far bigger club with more history and championships and et cetera. And you know, I think a lot of people agreed that getting this opportunity to get to the Sudamericana was a big part of one, them being able to keep as many players as they kept, and two, a way for them to you know, gain more attention, gain more eyes. Hey, look, we're doing interesting stuff too. for it to end like this, it puts a pretty serious dent in that for them. Obviously, they have a whole league season left, but their league season has also started roughly. This is going to be a really telling year, I think, for the you know, future of this team and what this team is. It's a daunting task for them again to win the affection of the city when Zamora are performing so well and drawing some of the best crowds in the league, from at least from the visual test. You know, they got a big fight ahead of them, but it'll be interesting to see if they're able to do it. A lot of teams try to be a city's second team and it doesn't go very well. A couple teams make it work. Metro, for example, have kind of made it work. A lot of other teams don't make it work. So it'll be interesting to see what they're able to do this season, if perhaps they're able to get another qualifier for something next year. But it's rough. You know, you wonder, are teams kind of figuring them out a little bit now? They had a whole year to kind of understand them. It's basically the same players doing the same stuff. Yeah, you know, it's rough. In terms of image, in terms of brand growth, it's going to be a rough year for them not having any continental play to build off of.
Yeah, and you said about, you know, teams working them out. A lot of teams have yet to face them, but have seen them play many games against the same opposition over and over again. And the teams that have faced them, you know, some of them have faced them at least four times because of how the format worked. You played everyone, you know, four times in the first half of the division, home and away, twice each. So the other thing to take in mind is, other than a few standout players, namely the Colombians plus Magallan, particularly after Jesus Yentes' departure, the team was always greater than the individual parts. This is a team that overachieved based on just looking at the individuals, mainly through, you know, their nickname, El Ciclón Azul, the blue hurricane, if you like, is that their football has been achieved by high intensity, very vertical football, very attacking, very relentless. And if teams in Venezuela can play with a low block, absorb that pressure, and counterattack them efficiently, which, you know, going as far back as 2019, that's the modus operandi of a lot of teams in Liga Football. They could really struggle this season, and it's going to be sad to watch, because they were, I reckon they were probably a lot of fans' second team last season. A lot of people enjoyed watching.
Yeah, and it, you know, it's tough. I think in 2021, when you had both Hermanos Colmenares and Useve promoted together, both teams, albeit in different ways, were so impressive. They played very well. They had interesting players. Both overall did relatively well in their league play. Hermanos better, but and I think it was a really, for me anyways, as a person who for various reasons is often very lower tier minded about football, it was a great show that of what is possible for promoted teams into Liga Footvay, because, you know, obviously the year after, you have some of the drama around Titanes who are promoted but end up not being able to apply or not able to receive a license to play in the league. Previously to those 2 years, there'd been some teams that have been promoted and sort of ground their way to finishing one spot above relegation or getting relegated. So it was great to see two teams come up and really, really show what they've got, really fight for it, play entertaining football. And you would hope that Hermanos are able to find a way to continue that story. But again, you know, as you talked about, it just seems like maybe the well is drying out a little bit in terms of being able to just rely on great moments from certain players to figure things out and just being able to blitz your way down the field constantly and just, you know, something will happen and we'll get a result somehow. That rock and roll, heavy metal, whatever football thing, to quote Jurgen Klopp from a couple years ago, that kind of whatever, that style, it was really fun. But, you know, I guess my final point on all this is just, it might not work anymore the way it was working. And so you wonder what that means for the team in terms of how they play and how they do.
Yeah, exactly. And I think getting into the group stages of the Copa Sudamericana would have just like continued that momentum, continued right. that fairy tale. Everyone buys into this wonderful story, and perhaps that could have carried them. Without that, what carries them? And that sounds negative because this is a team I love, but I do wonder, you know, can they replicate the same success of last season? Can they get into that that second championship, that second playoff competition that will end the season, the teams finishing between 5th and 12th? Because if they finish bottom four, that would be, you know, some drop away after an incredible first season in Liga Football. But moving on, the teams that are in the Copa Sudamericana group stages from Venezuela, as is abundantly clear by now, Metropolitanos, based in Caracas, and Deportivo La Guaira, another team that are based in Caracas, will go from neighbouring state La Guaira, formerly called Vargas. On a personal and selfish level, of the four Venezuelan teams that are playing continental football, three are based 20 minutes from my apartment, so I should get lots of opportunity to see continental football this season. And there are some big names in the Copa Sudamericana this year that are getting me excited, basically. So these aren't the official pots or the official seedings, if you like, but they are reliable and done to the coefficients, I guess, the ranking system that CONMEBOL use. So they are going to be 99% correct. In pot one, so, you know, the best teams in Copa Sudamericana by rankings, you have Santos of Brazil. Jefferson Soteldo's an old team, the 2020 finalists of that competition. Independiente of Argentina, Sao Paulo and Internacional of Brazil, Racing of Argentina, Quito of Ecuador, Lanús of Argentina, and Junior of Colombia. They are the biggest teams by ranking. And then in pot two, which is where Deportivo La Guaira find themselves, there's Defensa y Justicia. I've absolutely botched that pronunciation, but there you go. Jorge Wisterman of Bolivia, Independiente de Medellin of Colombia, Melgar of Peru, Montevideo Wanderers of Uruguay, Oriente Petrolero of Bolivia, and Union La Calera of Chile. In pot three, where Metropolitanos find themselves, there is River Plate of Uruguay, Atletico Goianiense of Brazil, Cerrero of Brazil, Banfield of Argentina, Union Santa Fe of Argentina, Ayacucho of Peru, and 9 de Octubre of Ecuador. And in pot four, considered the weakest teams by ranking, although there's some big names here, is Antofagasta, which is, of course, where former Deportivo Táchira manager now is this season alongside Hurtado, a Venezuelan player that's forced himself into the national team with a good year in Chile last season. Tolisano, by the way, the name of the head coach. Paraguay's Gareña, Brazil's Cuiabá, Paraguay's General Caballero, Ecuador's Barcelona, and then a big one from Brazil, Fluminense, Ecuador's Universidad Católica, and Chile's Everton. You could get a absolute group of death for Venezuelan opposition. For example, imagine if Deportivo La Guaira end up with Santos, they end up with Banfield or Uruguay's River Plate, and they then end up with Fluminense or Universidad Católica. It could, wow.
Yeah, that's a rough one. you know, I think the benefit, I suppose, of all that is particularly because I think it's fair to say that there's a slight asterisk on both these teams that I don't think anyone expects them to like make particularly a deep run, is that those are big opportunities to perform with a lot of eyes, a lot of attention, big stage, big teams. So in one sense, it does provide like, wow, look at the opportunity. But to your point, I mean, that's an incredibly rough. You know, we saw last year, Aragua just unable to handle the stage they were handed, particularly with Gremio, who they played twice. And I think Gremio scored like 15 goals against them between two games. They scored maybe like two. you know, so you worry about blowout games, but at the same time, I don't think La Guaira and Metro are those kinds of teams. I don't think they have the weakness in the roster that would create those situations. Yeah, you know, I suppose you would, from a sort of general league perspective, you would hope, like Guaira, who of course were the champions 2 years ago, you would maybe hope that they do get some good teams to play and that they have the opportunity to sort of showcase themselves as representatives of the league, particularly because of their accomplishments in recent years. They were in the Libertadores last year and did relatively well. But yeah, I mean, to your point, that very possible to get a serious group of death where you're facing some top sides from literally the two, you know, best leagues in the continent, including teams that, you know, are competing for domestic titles and would normally be expected to be in the Libertadores.
Yeah, and it's going to be, like I said, having the opportunity to see so much continental football in Caracas is going to be great. And to have, I think the teams that ultimately deserve to be in the group stages there, because although everyone would have liked to Manos Comaneras' fairy tale, Daniel Farias is a very good manager and there's some good talent in there. It'd be interesting to see if Deportivo La Guaira proved to be stronger than last season, because I was thinking perhaps not. But from 2020, when they won the league title, they have lost a number of key players, like, you know, Adrian Martinez wasn't involved in that title win, but, you know, he had a good season there last year and has gone overseas. And Charlie Sortis has obviously moved on. Achilles Acanto, these players that were huge in Deportivo La Guaira's title winning season. But they have been re-energized with the return of Giovanni Bolivar, for example, who was with DC United's affiliate Loudon last season and has made a decent start. Daluis Paz also back, Marin featuring more. And somehow, so far, they've continued to hold on to John Aramburu, who is their, you know, just defensive cover all, left back, centre back, right back, a back four, a back three, a back five. He's always there. And Carlos Olsas looks to continue impressive growth since returning from his loan spells abroad a couple of seasons ago. With Metropolitanos, like we've said, the rotation is going to be a big factor, but Jose Maria Moore is an impressive coach. Out of the two teams, who do you... two questions, and maybe the first question doesn't have an answer. The first question is, who do you think will go further in the tournament? But the second question is probably more prevalent. Which team do you think is going to win the more points? It's going to be a hard question to answer, Gulli, because we don't even know the groups at the moment. One group may be a group of death, one may be very easier. But if just looking at the quality of the teams, the managers, these are managers that have been with their teams for a number of seasons as well. They're not new arrivals, whereas Deportivo Táchira and Caracas in Libertadores are both playing under new managers this season. What's your gut saying over who you think is going to do better in the Sudamericana?
Yeah, you know, if we just assume that both kind of get like mild groups, maybe one big Brazilian team and otherwise more even opposition. You know, I think my gut would lean towards La Guaira for these reasons. One, the proven quality of coaching with Farias. Two, there's several players in this team still who were quite solid in the Libertadores in the league last year that aren't going to be scared off by the challenge of, you know, continental football. But also it's, you know, the team has kind of, as you noted, kind of shifted into a new project with a lot of its positions where it's bringing in these young guys, particularly from America, actually, either through loans or through Santiago Herrera, who was attending college up until now, who are performing really well. They've done well in league play, obviously, aside from the game in Barinas, they've done well in these Sudamericana qualifiers. I don't think either team is going to like make a super deep run. I don't think either necessarily will make like that run that Zulia made a couple years ago. But I do think that La Guaira would be the one I would think would get more results. There's just something about this team that they kind of find a way to just like annoy every challenger they have to face. And they kind of just figure things out the way they just kind of figured out a title in 2020 that, you know, a lot of people kind of think they probably weren't supposed to win, but they just figured out a way to do it. So yeah, I would bet on them.
I like Daniel Fadias a lot as a coach, and like I said, I think the consistency of both teams having managers that have been there for, you know, at least three seasons is going to help. My one worry with Deportivo La Guaira, I think I've said it publicly and posted on Twitter as well, is the formation that Farias has started this season with, that you know, he used in the Copa Libertadores as well. Why wouldn't he? It was still Venezuelan opposition. But I can't see that formation being sustainable coming up against foreign opposition. It's a weird one. It's a 5-3-2 on paper, but the middle three seems to contain two wingers and only sort of Alex Flores in the middle. Obviously, in a game, a formation ends up meaning very little. It's where the players position themselves in the style. But I think it's leaving them very open to play with essentially only one ball-winning midfielder sort of anchoring. And I worry about that a little bit without going into, you know, too much tactical depth on that. So it would be, basically my point is, it would be interesting to see if Farias adopts a different tactic in Copa Sudamericana. The past two seasons have shown and proved that he is a very tactically flexible coach, and a lot of his players are tactically adept in multiple formations, John Adamburu being the prime example, but Johan Kamana as well in defence or in midfield, equally capable. Even Lamantia can play as a centre-back or a sweeper, even as a defensive midfielder. Kennedy Silva has played as a right centre-back or a right-back. It's going to be interesting. Dominic, we will talk about this again once we know the group stages, and we'll probably pair that up with a podcast about the group stage draw for Copa Libertadores as well, both set to take place in a week's time. Until then, it's been a pleasure to talk to you as always, and thank you everyone for listening. Dominic, any closing comments?
Just that, you know, I think that despite the hopes perhaps that other teams would make it, I think that the four teams that are now in the respective continental competitions in CONMEBOL are strong competitors. I think that they all have the ability to beat other teams and to get points, especially at home. And so, you know, I think that's exciting. I think that people should be excited to see how that plays out, particularly if the groups they get are helpful. So yeah, you know, it is exciting to have some confidence that we're probably going to see at least some fun results in Libertadores and Sudamericana.
Excellent. Thank you again, Dom, and thank you for listening at home. Bye-bye.